On an evening in early December 2018, the young CEO of a cryptocurrency exchange reportedly dies while on his honeymoon in India. This death is not announced to customers for another month. And when they're told Gerald Cotton is the only person to hold the passwords to their funds, conspiracy theories grow, leaving some to wonder, could Gerald Cotton still be alive?
Honeymoon, moving the body, all the missing money. It was like, but what happened?
A Death in Cryptoland. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Nothing about us without us. That is the message of a new document taking aim at systemic racism in this country. It's called the Halifax Declaration, organized and written by participants of the National Black Canadians Summit. The document comes with a list of demands and expectations for improving the lives of Black Canadians, and it covers a lot of ground, from justice and housing to healthcare and school curriculum, to name just a few areas. Michaëlle Jean is the former Governor General of Canada. Her foundation spearheaded the creation of the Halifax Declaration. Michaëlle Jean, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well and glad to have you on the program again. Why do we need something like the Halifax Declaration in Canada now?
Well, you know, the sort of driving force of this national movement, because it's a movement to reflect established damning and devastating facts of racism, as well as strategies for action to tackle them, is the very consistent work achieved since 2016 with the successive massive gatherings of the National Black Keynesian Summit, organized, as you said, by the Michaëlle Jean Foundation. It seized upon the opportunity provided by the International Decade for People of African Descent, proclaimed by the United Nations, to uphold three core principles: recognition, justice, and development, with our essential, you know, corollaries. So from a bottom-up series of events held across the country, the journey began with the first National Black Keynesian Summit held in Toronto in 2017, then by the second one held in Ottawa in 2019, followed by a series of virtual meetings during the 2020-2021 pandemic, which culminated in Halifax in 2022, with, I must say, record-breaking participation, over 1,200 delegates from across Canada, among them 450 youth.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, in those consultations, part of this is about speaking to the urgency of this. What did you hear from Black Canadians over the course of those conversations that would lead you to think that a declaration like this now would help improve the lives, particularly of young Black people in this country?
Well, you know, we celebrate the Halifax Declaration. It is a powerful testament to our collective effort. It's a reference and already a very precious tool. The Halifax Declaration is an authentic outcome of the presentations, dialogues, and calls for action heard at each summit, and further validated through a national survey conducted with support from the Network for the Advancement of Black Communities and the Black Opportunity Fund. So the coming convocation is in a few days, new launched by the recently established UN Permanent Forum on People of African Descent, is the occasion, a joint event between the Michaëlle Jean Foundation and UNESCO. So it will enable leaders from Black communities across Canada, including young people, to report on the authentic and unprecedented mobilization for the eradication of systemic racial discrimination. So protagonists of the summit will attest to how the Halifax Declaration embodies a stride towards countering systemic racial discrimination in Canada and on the world stage, a fight that requires, you know, constant unyielding responsibility. It is the outcome of, you know, unprecedented action carried out collectively, inclusively, in a spirit of unity to achieve the ultimate goal and purpose of racial justice. So it's important to know that the approach comes from the grassroots, from experience, from perspectives, from expertise, from data directly rooted in the realities as they are lived, from the demands and expectations as formulated by Black communities, now being brought loudly and clearly to the attention of all Canadians and the world. And the call is for, yes, decisive change and we cannot say enough that this fight must be everyone's business and a shared responsibility.
There are dozens of calls to action, dozens of points of demands, things that people are looking for coming out of this declaration, education, justice, health, housing, sport. What is the thread, do you think, that runs through these, that pulls these together?
I think what it reveals is at once a truth, a past and present, an invocation, an irreversible and unshakable, fearless call for justice that nothing can deflect. You know, the struggle, achievements, and demands of Black communities in Canada have set nothing less but a global example, which the United Nations Population Fund has acknowledged. You know, from the disastrous, you know, legacy of centuries of colonization, of unspeakable violence, of war and conflict rage in the name of a supposed supremacy of the white race, with, you know, the dehumanization, commodification of our bodies and existence, history from which no one comes out unscathed. So you cannot understand racism today if you don't go back also to that, you know, tragedy. And the Halifax Declaration echoes our present-day mobilization affirmation. So what emerges from the Halifax Declaration is our powerful change, coupled with the power of concrete, constructive proposals. And the process of creating this manifesto is as important as its content. You know, post the Halifax summit, we conducted a national survey, receiving over 300 additions to the original text that further strengthened and validated our arguments. And of course, among the issues raised and examined in depth, you know, the facts of exclusion on all fronts, you said it, you know, within the judicial and educational systems, in the workplace, in the sphere of housing, entrepreneurship, and economic development, there is the racism also that undermines our health. So it has been at length also debated at the National Black Indian Summit and reflected in the Halifax Declaration. And I would like, you know, to recognize the active participation of youth. You know, the eloquent demonstration of their leadership, their commitment, and their courage. You know, their vibrant, insightful, powerful, and moving testimonies resonate. You know, their voices, experiences, perspectives, and reflections are everywhere in the Halifax Declaration, encompassing the diversity of positions taken, expectations expressed, and demands for recognition, justice, and reparation in support of shared, responsible and equitable human and economic development. So youth are definitely integral, you know, to both the solution and the change. And this is not a fleeting moment, you know. It will carry on because it is a powerful and indispensable movement on the journey for, yes, the eradication of systemic racial discrimination in Canada, and I would say around the world.
Just before I let you go, you could imagine that there are people who are listening to this who might think, with respect, that this is rather lofty language, that if people are living through systemic racism in housing, in justice, in education, what is it that will take that language down to make tangible improvements in the lives of people who have been impacted by systemic racism?
Well, you know, it's very tangible because as you read, you know, the Halifax Declaration, and people can go and just, you know, with Halifax Declaration, they can read it, how actually tangible it is, how real it is. And it is gratifying to witness the significant response it has garnered as it underscores, you know, the need for open and inclusive dialogue. You know, a genuine examination of yes, our past and a collective commitment to progress, to create a better future and foster greater humanity. And we must confront the truth about our history, acknowledge also the progress made, identify areas for change, and together with unwavering determination and confidence to build a stronger and more inclusive, you know, society and more inclusive world. So I would say that, you know, this moment is unprecedented. And I am amazed to see how our energy is unmatched through, you know, through the doors that were opened for us in generations past. Our presence is growing in every field, you know, from science, technology, and engineering and mathematics, you know, to the arts, from sports to business, in boardrooms and classrooms, from government to the grassroots. Black leaders are rising up, and our demands cannot be ignored. They're very clear. They're very, very clear. And what is interesting in how much we really affirm that we are part of the solutions, that nothing about us can be without us. And that's key. So we are organizing, we are mobilizing, we are unapologetic, unafraid, and we have a voice and we have a vision, you know? And it's, yeah, demands for recognition, justice, development, ring out in unity and very determined and strong. So what we're saying, clearly is that our moment is now, and the future of Canada is also black.
We're going to speak more about the specifics of what that future might look like in this country. Mikhail Jean, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mikhail Jean is the former Governor General of Canada. Her foundation spearheaded the creation of the Halifax Declaration.
Hello, I'm Jess Milton. For 15 years, I produced The Vinyl Cafe with the late, great Stuart MacLean. Every week, more than 2 million people tuned in to hear funny, fictional, feel-good stories about Dave and his family. We're excited to welcome you back to the warm and welcoming world of The Vinyl Cafe with our new podcast, Backstage at The Vinyl Cafe. Each week, we'll share 2 hilarious stories by Stuart, and for the first time ever, I'll tell you what it was like behind the scenes. Subscribe for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Elle Jones is one of the authors of that declaration. She will be joining Mikhail Jean to present it at the United Nations next week. Elle Jones is an activist, a poet, and assistant professor of political and Canadian studies at Mount St. Vincent University in Halifax. Elle Jones, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Mikhail Jones says that this is an unprecedented moment. What does this declaration mean to you?
I think what we see here is that we actually spent a lot of effort in gathering the voice of Black Canadians across this country, often voices that have never been heard, including up north, for example, places where we often don't consult through the generations, from our elders to youth. And it's been a long process of nearly a decade and more of gathering these voices. We know in 2020, obviously, we had perhaps in recent history the largest uprising of Black people on the streets, Black people going out with our bodies to address state violence and address anti-Black racism in Canada. We're now 3 years on from that. And even though we are not in the news anymore, those demands haven't dimmed. And we see that in this document, that we continue to be calling not for what people are willing to give us, but for what we know we deserve and need.
What is possible when it comes to tangible change coming out of this document? Again, there are a lot of areas that are covered, as we mentioned, from justice to education, housing, sport. It's a long list and an inclusive list. But when you take a look at the lives of Black Canadians, what do you see as the possibility for improvement in those lives coming out of a document like this?
Yeah, we live in a very paradoxical time right now. On the one hand, as Madame Jean mentioned, we're showing more success than ever. We're entering all these fields. We're leading in many fields. We're no longer the only or scarce or token. You see a lot of us in many places. And those doors have opened due to the work of people who came before us. But at the same time, we continue to be at the bottom of many socioeconomic measures. COVID showed us that in terms of the impacts on Black health reflected by the conditions that we live in. We continue to be over-incarcerated and over-policed. We continue to suffer the effects of our racist immigration system. We continue in education to not be reflected in curriculum and to still have lower outcomes. So wherever we look, paradoxically, we're both extremely successful, but also the mass of us is not necessarily experiencing that success. So our work and the work of all of us in Canada is to continue to push so that all Black people are living in a state of justice and equality and actually have the things that we need for this life. And that is possible. We saw in 2020 when we came out with Unified Voice, Black people, of course, but joined by Indigenous people and many communities who recognize that the myth that anti-Black racism doesn't exist in Canada is just that. And we saw a massive uprising. And so we're continuing to recognize that anti-Black racism exists in this country. It has a tangible effect on us. And so our response is to continue to identify it and continue to organize in all fields.
What change do you think in the 3 years since 2020, in the wake of the murder of George Floyd and the reckoning that we saw around the world, but as you point out, here in Canada as well? What do you think has tangibly changed since then?
I think what we saw is an incredible energy, largely led by young people, where we had people refusing to remain silent anymore, refusing to accept the idea that we somehow experienced some kind of lesser racism, or it didn't really exist, or we ourselves didn't exist. And then once we saw that sort of peak of response, there was a sense that we went back to obscurity, that Black issues are no longer cool or trendy. But of course, we have persisted. So we've seen young people continuing as organizers. We've seen more and more groups across all groups in Black society as well, I think from that moment, we recognize that we must be unrelenting, that we have to make demands, that we cannot stay silent and think that the government is going to give us what they choose to give us. And part of this document is saying that I think in the past, a lot of the way the Black community was dealt with was a few select people would be allowed at the so-called table to speak for the whole community. And as long as we got a little bit, we were supposed to accept that that was enough. And I think that is what has changed. We're no longer accepting this kind of incremental change, or that we should accept that, you know, it's not fast enough, as Martin Luther King talked to us about, the idea that we should accept gradual change and think it's enough. And I think that has really changed. I think we've seen now a community that is unified, that is recognizing our community is growing. We are one of the youngest communities in Canada. So I think we are saying that we don't accept that we're an afterthought in this country. We don't accept that we haven't made historical contributions, that we haven't always existed, that we haven't always been present, and that our communities don't matter. And that is what's reflected in this document and beyond. So this document is not the organizing work, it's a reflection of it. And that work continues, but it continues upon these unified lines. And part of this document is saying, no Black life left behind. We often don't talk about Black people who have disabilities, queer and trans Black people, Black youth, Black people living in a homelessness, Black people struggling with mental health problems. They also count, and their lives matter. And this document also speaks for that.
Can I ask you just, you mentioned youth. And in the document, you say the Black Canadian population is younger than the average. We are the future standing on the shoulders of our ancestors. Michael Jean just said the future is Black. Where do you see, I mean, and in the conversations that you've had with Black youth, where do they see their place in this country right now?
I think Black youth are experiencing, again, a kind of paradox. We see a more political generation than ever, a generation that isn't afraid to organize in their schools, that isn't afraid to organize on the streets, that is speaking out on serious social issues. We've seen youth leading these movements, getting arrested. We've seen youth entering into politics. And we have some extremely young leaders across this country. So on the one hand, again, we see youth in all levels, Black youth stepping forward to the front of their communities. But at the same time, we know that our youth are in crisis. There's a mental health crisis among all youth, including Black youth. Many of our youth find it difficult to find housing or complete their education or get employment. And they're still suffering anti-Black racism in the places that they work and go to school. So at the same time as youth have a voice, youth are also struggling. And we see that across Canada as well. It's not limited to the Black community. But of course, we know that Black people always will suffer due to anti-Black racism. We will always feel the effects in an extreme way. So we can't let this generation slide. We can't say racism doesn't exist anymore, or you just need to be satisfied with what you have in Canada, because we're seeing the effects when we have unhoused people, when we see Black people struggling and not able to get treatment, when we see our young people entering into the criminal justice system and not getting fair treatment and not getting fair sentences, when we see our young people in shelters experiencing violence in their homes. All of that are things that are impacting our community. So at the same time, we have a generation that's rising up and speaking up, but they know that they are not experiencing equality and justice in this country. And that is exactly why they are mobilizing. And we all as well have to mobilize behind this, because we often think Black issues only affect Black people, but they affect the whole country. We are citizens too. We are people that are part of this country. We contribute to it. And if we can't succeed, the country actually suffers as well. And that's why this impacts everybody.
Do you worry about the context that this appears in, which is a different context than 3 years ago, when you have a pendulum that is swinging the other way in some ways, and a pushback against, I mean, this word means a million things to a million people, but, you know, there's a pushback against what people will call woke. And that it doesn't, I'm not giving, you know, weight to that word, but you know what I'm talking about, that there is a different conversation now in many ways than there was 3 years ago. Do you worry about that?
No, because we have always experienced this. In 1968, we had a global Black Revolution. 1968 was probably our most revolutionary year in recent history, and of course there was backlash then. We were rising in the 1990s, and there was backlash. In Nova Scotia, the Black United Front formed through the 60s and 70s, and there was backlash. Whenever Black people rise up and speak up, we face backlash. The minute we make a step forward, our progress is treated like it somehow harms other people. Because when you hold power, any idea of sharing that power seems like oppression, but it's not. So whenever Black people start to speak about anti-Black racism, and whenever we get small gains, it's always treated as though it's too far. You will see that in the 1960s, people talked about, now we've gone too far. Mm. People talked about at the end of slavery, well, now we're going too far. Time periods that we now acknowledge were periods of oppression were seen as too far when Black people took those steps forward. So it is inevitable and expected that due to our steps forward in 2020, we would have people now saying that speaking about racism is so-called woke, things that make people uncomfortable, therefore are harmful. We should shut down discussions of Black history because it somehow makes other people uncomfortable. And that is not new to us. And we will keep pushing forward because we know the facts are on our side. When you look at how we're actually doing on these social measures, we are still suffering and we are still impacted and we still show lower outcomes than other people. So we know that our work isn't done. So it doesn't shake me. I've been dealing this my entire adult life, as has Madame Jean, as has every Black person in Canada. For our whole lives, we have been hearing that we're asking for too much. We're going too far. Martin Luther King talked to us about this. This is not news. So I think our task, as always, is to not be shaken by people that don't want to see us get our due and people that don't want to hear our voices. That has always been the case. And we have always had to organize through that. And we are never going to be taken aback by that or stop organizing until we have true equality.
Just before I let you go, we are out of time, but what will show success to you? A document is one thing, and it comes out of discussions. But as you said, this isn't, you know, the last point in this. So what will show success to you?
We move step by step. So we have success and we move backwards. I think success would be when we have an immigration system that is equal to Black people, when we don't see Black people being deported and stopped at our borders, when we don't see Black people filling up our prisons, when we don't see Black people living homeless, when we see Black people achieving an education. And that won't happen all at once. We know that. Will that happen in my lifetime? Probably not. So what we do is move forward step by step. And we have to, as a community, unify, be collective. And this is what we see in this document, that we have spoken with one voice. And that is a show that we will continue to move forward. So our success isn't shown necessarily right away. We take steps back. But what we know is we keep fighting on every front and we keep moving forward. So success is everything from every youth that graduates from high school or university, every new doctor we see, every person fighting in their union, every person that gets housing, every person that feels proud to be Black. All of those are measures of success. And we will continue to acknowledge those and fight for the next step forward.
I'm glad to talk to you as always. Elle, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Elle Jones is an activist, poet, professor at Mount St. Vincent University, and one of the authors of the Halifax Declaration.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.